Support this NPR station.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. The Justice Department has released the redacted version of the report by the special counsel, Robert Mueller III, who investigated Russia election interference and any ties to the Trump campaign and possible presidential obstruction. Attorney General William Barr offered a strong defense earlier this morning of President Trump before releasing Mr. Mueller's report, saying that investigators found no evidence that any member of the Trump campaign conspired with Russia in its effort to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. But he left no doubt that Russia interfered in the election, a fact that President Trump has not acknowledged. And I'm reading this from the New York Times website right now. Attorney General Barr said during a news conference earlier today that he gave Trump's lawyers access to the Mueller report earlier this week before it was to be sent to Congress and made public. Mr. Trump's lawyers did not ask for any redactions. Investigators examined 10 episodes in which the president may have obstructed justice, but the attorney general said he concluded that they did not add up to a crime. Even if the Trump campaign colluded with WikiLeaks, the attorney general said this was not a crime. Mr. Trump did not even wait for the report to begin responding aggressively, lashing out with a barrage of tweets denouncing the investigation, while Democrats lashed out at Attorney General Barr, accusing him of acting as a spokesperson for the president. We're going to talk about what we know so far with Louis Varelli, a professor of law at Stetson University College of Law right here in Gulfport, teaching administrative law, civil procedure, constitutional law, and the separation of powers. And Professor Varelli, welcome back to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
So what's your take? And I know this is we're just getting the report out now in Washington, so you haven't had time to read the report. But just what was your take on Attorney General Barr's press conference just 2 hours ago?
Well, I think the word that he used in sort of framing his remarks was unprecedented. And I think that word is what struck me about the entire press conference. So it is an unusual for the Attorney General to take the podium and comment on a report that's going to be made public before it's made public.
What is the constitutional role of the U.S. Attorney General?
Well, he is the chief law enforcement officer for the federal government. So the Attorney General's job is to enforce all of our laws, criminal and civil, and to make, in the process of enforcing those laws, to make prosecutorial decisions about whether or not to go forward in particular cases.
And what did you think? I mean, if he was doing a press conference and sort of taking the president's side at that press conference, is that traditionally part of the attorney general's role?
Well, and I think back to the word unprecedented, right? I mean, this whole thing is unusual in the sense that we haven't had, thankfully, haven't had too many examples in American history where we were investigating the conduct of a president. When that is the reason that Special Counsel Mueller was appointed in the first place, is because the normal criminal investigation process at the federal level would be run through the Attorney General's office, which is the Department of Justice, and the Attorney General serves at the pleasure of the president, works for the president. So we are already in a situation where, based on the allegations and the scope of the investigation, the Attorney General's role is at least slightly different. Now, in this case, the special counsel's report was required to be sent to the Attorney General. I think Attorney General Barr said, it's my report because it was sent to me. And that dynamic is what is causing some of the confusion. It is highly unusual for the Attorney General to characterize an investigation that didn't end up in an indictment. It's even more fraught when the Attorney General is describing an investigation of his boss that was done by a third party who sort of tangentially is associated with the Justice Department.
What's the role of the special counsel in this, and how has it changed since the Clinton investigation, the Starr investigation into President Clinton?
Well, I would say for sort of in common understanding, the differences are small, right? See, Ken Starr's office, his independent counsel role, came to be through a different mechanism. It came to be through a statute passed by Congress describing, called the Ethics in Government Act, that describes how he was supposed to do his job and what his powers were. Special Counselor Mueller, that statute was not renewed by Congress in the 1990s. Special Counsel Mueller's responsibilities are defined largely by Justice Department internal regulations. But the theme is the same. The theme is, how do you investigate, if at all, allegations of illegal activity by the President of the United States? The normal answer to how we investigate crimes at the federal level would be the Attorney General. That seems like an inherently bad decision when you're investigating any president, because the Attorney General works for them. You certainly don't need to be a lawyer to understand that conflict. So we've over the years, over the decades, and over the centuries, tried to come up with a scenario that allows for an independent investigation of the president to go on, while not losing control of that investigator. We don't want that investigator to go too far afield, because we don't want them to disrupt sort of the normal function of government. And that's where Special Counsel Mueller fits in this.
So I just want to read a little bit from the report that just making the wires right now, and I'm going to read two paragraphs from the Mueller report and just get your take on this. This is what the special counsel said. Because we determined not to make a traditional prosecutorial judgment, we did not draw ultimate conclusions about the president's conduct, the report states. The evidence we obtained about the president's actions and intent presents difficult issues that would need to be resolved if we were making a traditional prosecutorial judgment. At the same time, if we had confidence after a thorough investigation of the facts that the president clearly did not commit obstruction of justice, we would so state. Based on the facts and the applicable legal standards, we aren't able to reach that judgment. Accordingly, while this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him, the Mueller report says. What do you make of those two paragraphs?
Well, and I think that's I don't have them in front of me, and that's certainly just a function of the timing here, but so forgive me if I don't have all the words in my head as I'm answering, but I think it's fair to say that that is a classic prosecutorial response to a very difficult question. And so even in a normal case, which does not involve the President of the United States, a criminal prosecutor's job is to evaluate not only whether they think a particular crime was committed, but whether the evidence is there to prove it to the legal standard, which is beyond a reasonable doubt. That process becomes even more complicated when the target of the investigation, and target might be too strong a word, when the person of interest is the president, and there is existing Department of Justice legal opinions that say the president, a sitting president, cannot be indicted. So it's one thing to say we have the evidence, which is a difficult question, particularly in a case like obstruction of justice, which requires a proof of the president's intent. And then it becomes even more complicated when we say, even if that evidence was there, and to the degree we would need it to be to bring charges, it may be that the president is unable to be indicted as a matter of constitutional law. And that's an open question. But the Justice Department has opined in writing in the past that a sitting president cannot be indicted for committing a crime. So both of those complications would give any prosecutor pause in a report to say, we think the president committed this crime as in our prosecutorial judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the reasons that the actual report being made public is of such interest, because the report ostensibly will have in it the relevant evidence that Special Counsel Mueller and his team found or had. And then the public's opinion about that evidence is relevant. It is not relevant to whether the president is indicted, because the public doesn't have the power to indict him. But it is relevant to what the public thinks about the president's conduct. And the public's opinion of the president's conduct is one of the major checks on presidential power in our constitutional system.
Going back to your point a moment ago, that there is that existing legal opinion in the Department of Justice that says that a sitting president cannot be indicted. Is that opinion that was issued, I think, during the Watergate era, or correct me if I'm wrong, is that universally supported around the legal community in the country?
No, I wouldn't call it very controversial. It's just unclear or a difficult question. So the Constitution is a brilliant document, but it is not a very detailed one. And it does not outline for us what some would consider to be basic questions, because it's roughly 14 pages long, or at least I've read versions of it that are 14 pages long. So we are left to sort of make arguments based on precedent and historical practice and sort of reasoning about how we want government to function. And there are lots of reasons why indicting a sitting president is problematic. There's also a structural argument, we call it a structural argument in constitutional law, that says the Constitution does have a remedy for a president that we think committed a crime, and that's impeachment. So if you think impeachment is the only solution, then indictment wouldn't be necessary and may not be allowed. If you think impeachment is not the only solution and that no person is above the law in the sense that we should be able to indict a president no matter how disruptive that might be to government, then you can take the other position. The opinion came from the Office of Legal Counsel, which is a very prestigious office in the Justice Department that tries to answer these very difficult questions when they arise. And those opinions are taken very seriously, even though they are not law. And they are taken very seriously because they should be, because historically the people writing them are very knowledgeable and sophisticated lawyers.
And let me go back to the last words that I read, and this has been, I think, pretty well known since Attorney General Barr issued his four-page summary a few weeks ago. The Mueller report says, accordingly, while this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him, the Mueller report says. So if that were to be taken further, who would it be up to look at that question about whether or not this report exonerates him? If, and I hope that if I'm maybe not making that clear, but where does this go next?
So I would say, as a criminal matter involving the president, I think it does not. It goes nowhere. So I think that the possibility of criminal charges against President Trump are largely put to rest by the fact that Special Counsel Mueller chose not to bring charges. The lack of charges is not a surprise to those of us that follow this from the legal side, because of the complications of indicting a sitting president, because it would be quite literally the first time in our history that we've done so. And there are good constitutional arguments, whether they're persuasive or not, there are viable constitutional arguments that say that indictment is not possible or not allowed. Where does this go next? Well, the constitutional answer would be impeachment. Now, I'm not suggesting that impeachment is or is not justified. That's up to the House of Representatives. But that possibility cannot be taken off the table by anybody but the House of Representatives. That is entirely up to them. And then whether or not those articles of impeachment result in removal of a president from office, because impeachment and removal are separate things, the removal part is done by the Senate, who holds a trial to determine whether the president is, let's call it, guilty of violating the articles of impeachment. So the House chooses to impeach on certain grounds. The Senate tries the president in their own process to determine if the president did, in fact, commit an impeachable offense, and then a president is removed. That system never goes away. That is in the Constitution and cannot be interfered with by anybody but the members of Congress. Of course, the caveat to that is we've never done that. We've only impeached two presidents, and we've removed zero. So it is a very difficult political process that goes beyond the legal question.
And Professor Varelli, one last question. Is there anything else that you want to add to this? You talked about the unprecedented nature of this press conference at 9:30 this morning. Is there anything else that you want to add to this whole discussion about the issuance of the Mueller report?
And this is just my perspective, but I think the important part of this for the general public is to remember our role, and I'm including myself because I'm talking now about voters, right? To remember our role in the process. Our role is to learn what we can about the way our officials behaved and decide for ourselves, in our own view, whether that is an acceptable way to behave. I'm not suggesting that anything the president did was or was not. Your listeners shouldn't care what I think about that. But it is our responsibility to make that judgment. So the report is relevant in that regard, and it may be that people read the report and say, I don't think the president did anything that I wouldn't expect him to do, and others may feel differently. That conclusion matters, even if it does not result in a legal consequence for the president or anybody else, because our job is to evaluate our leaders, all of them, including the members of Congress who are going to be investigating him, to ensure that they behave in a way that we find acceptable when we go to the polls. So that role never goes away, and I think it's important that people focus on that as opposed to some of the more idiosyncratic legal issues.
So the democracy is an important part of the Constitution. The Constitution envisions people having a say.
It absolutely does, and it counts on us, frankly, right? That's why there are so few explicit remedies in the Constitution when our elected officials do or do not do what we expect of them. The remedy is largely us, as I tell my students. It is our job to evaluate and make our own judgment, and the only way we can do that is by understanding what is in that report. The one thing I can say is that there's no facial indication that the report is not credible, in the sense that Special Counsel Mueller, who is not a Democrat, which shouldn't matter, but is not, there's no reason to believe that he didn't conduct himself in a way that any competent, qualified prosecutor would. So I think that the evidence in that report can be taken at least as relevant and as true to the extent that the report describes it as such, and then we can reach our own conclusions, and I think we should, about what it says.
All right, so all of us should go out right now and read that report.
Or at least read credible accounts of it if we don't want to commit ourselves to 300 pages. I wouldn't ask anybody to do that necessarily.
Professor Varelli, thank you for coming back on WMNF.
I appreciate the time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. That's Louis Varelli. He's a professor of law at Stetson University College of Law in Gulfport. He teaches administrative law, civil procedure, constitutional law, and the separation of powers. And before joining Stetson, Professor Varelli served for 5 years as a trial attorney in the civil division of the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C. We're going to be right back in just a moment. We are going to hear most of the press conference this morning with Attorney General Barr. Then we're going to give you some updates about what the Mueller report does contain. It's just been released within the last 20 minutes, and we'll tell you about that in just a moment. Stick around. This is WMNF in Tampa. From Oliver Mitakudzi. You're listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. In a moment, we're going to open up the phone lines, and you're probably hearing about and reading about the Mueller report right now. I'm going to read a little bit about what I know. This is the latest on the release of the Mueller report, which happened just about 20 or 24 minutes ago. Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report includes President Trump's written responses submitted in the Russian probe. Trump's responses are being released by Attorney General William Barr without redactions and comprised 12 pages. Trump told Mueller that he had no recollection of several key events in Mueller's probe, including a 2016 meeting at Trump Tower between top aides and a Russian lawyer offering aid to his campaign. Trump also told Mueller that he had no recollection that he was told that Russian President Vladimir Putin wanted to aid his campaign or hurt Hillary Clinton's 2016 effort, or that any foreign leader wanted to help his candidacy. Trump declined a sit-down interview request from the Special Counsel Mueller. Special Counsel Mueller's report says President Trump reacted to his appointment by saying it was the end of his presidency. Mueller investigated multiple instances instances of Trump attempting to curtail the special counsel probe as part of a determining whether the president committed obstruction of justice. Robert Mueller's report reveals President Trump's efforts to seize control of the Russia probe and force the special counsel's removal. A redacted version of Mueller's report was released this morning. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says Attorney General William Barr is involved in a staggering public effort by the Trump administration to put a positive face on special counsel Robert Mueller's report. That remark from Pelosi came because of what we're about to hear next. The press conference that Attorney General William Barr held this morning at 9:30. We're going to hear most of it right now, right here on WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And we'll have more about the contents of the Mueller report in just a moment. And later, in just a few minutes, we will open up the phone lines and take your phone calls about the Mueller report. But let's go back to 9:30 this morning. This is Attorney General William Barr giving his take on the Mueller report before it was even released.
Good morning, everybody, and thanks for being here this morning. As you know, on March 22nd, Special Counsel Robert Mueller concluded his investigation into matters related to Russian attempts to interfere in our 2016 presidential election. And he submitted his confidential report to me pursuant to department regulations. As I said during my Senate confirmation hearing and since, I'm committed to ensuring the greatest degree possible of transparency concerning the special counsel's investigation, consistent with the law. At 11 this morning, I'm going to transmit copies of the public version of the special counsel's report to the chairman and ranking members of the Senate and House Judiciary Committees. The Department of Justice will also make the report available to the American people by posting it on the department's website after it has been delivered to Congress. I'd like to make a few comments today on the report. Before I do that, I want to thank Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein for joining me here today and for his assistance and counsel throughout this process. Rod, as you know, has served at the department for nearly 30 years with dedication and distinction, and it's been a great privilege and pleasure for me to work with him since my confirmation. He had well-deserved plans to step back from public service that were interrupted by my asking him to help in my transition. Rod has been an invaluable partner, and I am grateful that he is willing to help me and has been able to see the special counsel's investigation through to its conclusion. Thanks, Rod.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'd also like to thank Special Counsel Robert Mueller for his service and the thoroughness of his investigation, particularly his work exposing the nature of Russia's attempts to interfere in our electoral process. As you know, one of the primary purposes of the special counsel's investigation was to determine whether President Trump's campaign or any individual associated with it conspired or coordinated with the Russian government to interfere in the 2016 election. Volume 1 of the special counsel's report describes the results of that investigation. As you will see, the special counsel's report states that his, quote, investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities. I am sure that all Americans share my concern about the efforts of the Russian government to interfere in our presidential election. As the special counsel report makes clear, the Russian government sought to interfere in our election process. But thanks to the special counsel's thorough investigation, we now know that the Russian operatives who perpetrated these schemes did not have the cooperation of President Trump or the Trump campaign, or the knowing assistance of any other American for that matter. That is something that all Americans can and should be grateful to have confirmed. The special counsel report outlines two main efforts by the Russian government to influence the 2016 election. First, the report details efforts by the Internet Research Agency, a Russian company with close ties to the Russian government, to sow social discord among American voters through disinformation and social media operations. Following a thorough investigation of this disinformation campaign, the special counsel brought charges in federal court against several Russian nationals and entities for their respective roles in this scheme. Those charges remain pending, and the individual defendants remain at large. But the special counsel found no evidence that any American, including anyone associated with the Trump campaign, conspired or coordinated with the Russian government or the IRA in this illegal scheme. Indeed, as the report states, quote, the investigation did not identify evidence that any U.S. person knowingly or intentionally coordinated with the IRA's interference operation, unquote. Put another way, the special counsel found no collusion by any Americans in IRA's illegal activities. Second, the report details efforts by the Russian military officials associated with the GRU, the Russian Military Intelligence Organization, to hack into computers and steal documents and emails from individuals associated with the Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton's campaign for the purpose of eventually publicizing these documents. Obtaining such unauthorized
All right, we've got some technical problems. This is WMNF in Tampa. This is the press conference from earlier today. Attorney General William Barr.
Russian military officers for their respective roles in these illegal hacking operations. Those charges are still pending, and the defendants remain at large. But again, the special counsel's report did not find any evidence that members of the Trump campaign or anyone associated with the campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in these hacking operations. In other words, there was no evidence of the Trump campaign collusion with the Russian government's hacking. The special counsel's investigation also examined Russian efforts to publish stolen emails and documents on the internet. The special counsel found that after the GRU disseminated some of the stolen documents to entities that it controlled, DC Leaks and Guccifer II, the GRU transferred some of the stolen materials to WikiLeaks for publication. WikiLeaks then made a series of document dumps. The special counsel also investigated whether any member or affiliate of the Trump campaign encouraged or otherwise played a role in these dissemination efforts. Under applicable law, publication of these types of material would not be criminal unless the publisher also participated in the underlying hacking conspiracy. Here, too, the special counsel's report did not find that any person associated with the Trump campaign illegally participated in the dissemination of the materials. Finally, the special counsel investigated a number of links or contacts between the Trump campaign officials and individuals connected with the Russian government during the 2016 presidential campaign. After reviewing these contacts, the special counsel did not find any conspiracy to violate U.S. law involving Russian-linked persons and any persons associated with the Trump campaign. So that's the bottom line. After nearly 2 years of investigation, thousands of subpoenas, hundreds of warrants, and witness interviews, the special counsel confirmed that the Russian government sponsored efforts to illegally interfere with the 2016 presidential election, but did not find that the Trump campaign or other Americans colluded in those efforts. After finding no underlying collusion with Russia, the special counsel's report goes on to consider whether certain actions of the president could amount to obstruction of the special counsel's investigation. As I addressed in my March 24th letter, the special counsel did not make a traditional prosecutorial judgment regarding this allegation. Instead, the report recounts 10 episodes involving the president and discusses potential legal theories for connecting those activities to the elements of an obstruction offense. After carefully reviewing the facts and legal theories outlined in the report, and in consultation with the Office of Legal Counsel and other department lawyers, the Deputy Attorney General and I concluded that the evidence developed by the special counsel is not sufficient to establish that the president committed an obstruction of justice offense. Although the Deputy Attorney General and I disagreed with some of the special counsel's legal theories and felt that some of the episodes examined did not amount to obstruction as a matter of law, we did not rely solely on that in making our decision. Instead, we accepted the special counsel's legal framework for purposes of our analysis and evaluated the evidence as presented by the special counsel in reaching our conclusions. In assessing the president's actions discussed in the report, it is important to bear in mind the context. President Trump faced an unprecedented situation. As he entered into office and sought to perform his responsibilities as president, federal agents and prosecutors were scrutinizing his conduct before and after taking office and the conduct of some of his associates. At the same time, there was relentless speculation in the news media about the president's personal culpability. Yet, as he said from the beginning, there was, in fact, no collusion. And as the special counsel's report acknowledges, there is substantial evidence to show that the president was frustrated and angered by his sincere belief that the investigation was undermining his presidency, propelled by his political opponents and fueled by illegal leaks. Nonetheless, the White House fully cooperated with the special counsel's investigation, providing unfettered access to campaign and White House documents, directing senior aides to testify freely, and asserting no privilege claims. And at the same time, the president took no act that in fact deprived the special counsel of the documents and witnesses necessary to complete his investigation. Apart from whether the acts were obstructive, this evidence of non-corrupt motives weighs heavily against any allegation that the president had a corrupt intent to obstruct the investigation. Now, before I take questions, I want to address a few aspects of the process for producing the public report that I am releasing today. As I said several times, the report contains limited redactions related to four categories of information. To ensure as much transparency as possible, those redactions have been clearly labeled so that the readers can tell which redactions correspond to which categories. Now, to recall, those categories are 6E material, grand jury material, information that the IC believes would disclose sources and methods, information that would impair the investigation and prosecution of other cases that are underway, and finally, information that implicates the privacy and reputational interests of peripheral third parties. As you will see, most of the redactions were compelled by the need to prevent harm to ongoing matters and to comply with court orders prohibiting the public disclosure of information bearing on ongoing investigations and criminal cases, such as the IRA case and the Roger Stone case. These redactions were applied by Department of Justice attorneys working closely together with attorneys from the special counsel's office, as well as the intelligence community, and prosecutors are handling the ongoing cases. The redactions are their work product. No redactions done by anybody outside this group. There were no redactions done by anybody outside this group. No one outside this group proposed any redactions, and no one outside the department has seen the unredacted report. with the exception of certain sections that were made available to IC, the intelligence community, for their advice on protecting intelligence sources and methods. Consistent with longstanding executive branch practice, the decision whether to assert executive privilege over any portion of the report rested with the President of the United States. Because the White House had voluntarily cooperated with the special counsel, significant portions of the report contained material over which the President could have asserted privilege, and he would have been well within his rights to do so. Following my March 29th letter, the Office of the White House Counsel requested the opportunity to review the redacted version of the report in order to advise the President on the potential invocation of privilege, which is consistent with longstanding practice. Following that review, the President confirmed that in the interest of transparency and full disclosure to the American people, he would not assert privilege over the special counsel's report. Accordingly, the public report I am releasing today contains redactions only for the four categories that I previously outlined, and no material has been redacted based on executive privilege. In addition, earlier this week, the President's personal counsel requested and was given the opportunity to read a final version of the redacted report before it was publicly released. That request was consistent with a practice followed under the Ethics in Government Act, which permitted individuals named in a report prepared by an independent counsel the opportunity to read the report before publication. The President's personal lawyers were not permitted to make and did not request any redactions. In addition to making the redacted report public, we are also working with Congress to accommodate their legitimate oversight interests with respect to the special counsel's investigation. We have been consulting with Chairman Graham and Chairman Nadler through this process, and we will continue to do so. Given the limited nature of the redactions, I believe that the publicly released report will allow every American to understand the results of the special counsel's investigation. Nevertheless, in an effort to accommodate congressional requests, we will make available, subject to appropriate safeguards, to a bipartisan group of leaders from several congressional committees, a version of the report with all redactions removed, except those relating to grand jury information. Thus, these members of Congress will be able to see all of the redacted material for themselves, with a limited exception of that which, by law, cannot be shared. I believe that this accommodation, together with my upcoming testimony before the Senate and House Judiciary Committees, will satisfy any need Congress has for information regarding the special counsel's investigation. Once again, I'd like to thank you for being here, and I will now have a few questions.
Mr. Attorney General, we don't have the report in hand, so could you explain for us the special counsel's articulated reason for not reaching a decision on obstruction of justice, and if it had anything to do with the department's longstanding guidance on not indicting a sitting president? And you say you disagreed with some of his legal theories. What did you disagree with him on?
I'd leave it to his description in the report, the special counsel's own articulation of why he did not want to make a determination as to whether or not there was an obstruction offense. But I will say that when we met with him, Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein and I met with him, along with Ed O'Callaghan, who is the principal associate deputy, on March 5th, we specifically asked him about the OLC opinion and whether or not he was taking the position that he would have found a crime but for the existence of the OLC opinion. And he made it very clear several times that that was not his position. He was not saying that but for the OLC opinion, he would have found a crime. He made it clear that he had not made the determination that there was a crime.
What did you disagree with him on?
Given that, why did you and Mr. Rosenstein feel the need you had to take it to the next step to conclude that there was no crime, especially given that DOJ policy?
Well,
the very prosecutorial function and all our powers as prosecutors, including the power to convene grand juries and the compulsory process that's involved there, is for one purpose and one purpose only. It's determined yes or no. Was alleged conduct criminal or not criminal? That is our responsibility, and that's why we have the tools we have. And we don't go through this process just to collect information and throw it out to the public. We collect this information, we use that compulsory process for the purpose of making that decision. And because the special counsel did not make that decision, we felt the department had to, and that was a decision by me and the Deputy Attorney General.
Yes. Did the special counsel indicate that he wanted you to make the decision or that it should be left for Congress? And also, how do you respond to criticism you're receiving from congressional Democrats that you're acting more as an attorney for the president rather than as the chief law enforcement officer?
Special Counsel Mueller did not indicate that his purpose was to leave the decision to Congress. I hope that was not his view, since we don't convene grand juries and conduct criminal investigations for that purpose. I didn't talk to him directly about the fact that we were making the decision, but I am told that his reaction to that was that it was my prerogative as Attorney General to make that decision.
Attorney General Bob Catherine here at Fox News. Hi there. Is there anything you can share today about your review of the genesis of the Russia investigation and whether assets have been provided to investigate?
No, today I'm really focused just on the process of releasing this report.
Attorney General,
senior Democrats in Congress have asked for Robert Mueller himself to testify. Robert Mueller remains a Justice Department employee as of this moment. Will you permit him to testify publicly to Congress?
I have no objection to Bob Mueller personally testifying.
Mr. Attorney General, let's start with Democrats who have questioned some of the process here. A Republican-appointed judge on Tuesday said you have, quote, created an environment that has caused a significant part of the American public to be concerned about these redactions. You cleared the president on obstruction. The president is fundraising off of your comments about spying. And here you have remarks that are quite generous to the president, including acknowledging his feelings and his emotions. So what do you say to people on both sides of the aisle who are concerned that you are trying to protect the president?
Well, actually, the statements about his sincere beliefs are recognized in the report that there was substantial evidence for that. So I'm not sure what your basis is for saying that I'm being generous to the president.
You face an unprecedented situation. It just seems like there's a lot of effort to go out of your way to acknowledge how this.
Well, is there another precedent for it?
No, but it's unusual.
Okay, so unprecedented is an accurate description, isn't it?
Yes, but okay. What do you say to people who are concerned that you're trying to protect the president?
Eric? There's a lot of public interest in the absence of the special counsel and members of his team. Was he invited to join you up on the podium? Why is he not here? This is his report, obviously, that you're talking about today.
No, it's not.
The report he did for me as the Attorney General. He is required under the regulation to provide me with a confidential report. I'm here to discuss my response to that report and my decision, entirely discretionary, to make it public, since these reports are not supposed to be made public. That's what I'm here to discuss.
Impropriety for you to come out and sort of what appears to be sort of spinning the report before the public gets a chance to read it.
Thank you very much.
That was the end of the press conference with Attorney General William Barr. As you heard towards the end, the questions got tougher, and Democrats are chiming in about that press conference, about the issuing of the Mueller report. Democrats vying for their party's 2020 presidential nomination condemned Attorney General William Barr for acting like a defender of President Donald Trump. Barr held that news conference at 9:30 this morning about the Mueller report before it was released. He said the report found no cooperation between Trump's 2016 presidential campaign and Russians interfering in that election. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren tweeted a few minutes ago that it was a disgrace for Barr to act like the personal attorney and publicist for Trump. New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand called Barr's news conference that we just heard a farce and an embarrassing display of propaganda for Trump. And New Jersey Senator Cory Booker said the American people deserve the truth, not spin from a Trump appointee. California Senator Kamala Harris tweeted that Barr's news conference was a stunt filled with political spin. The Justice Department has provided Congress with a redacted version of the report. Democrats want the full report released. We're going to open up the phones and take your phone calls about what we know so far. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And you are listening to 88.5 FM WMNF in Tampa. I'm going to read some more of the press coverage of the Mueller report that was just released about 50 minutes ago, give or take a few minutes. Special Counsel Robert Mueller's team was dissatisfied with the written responses from President Trump, but decided against issuing a subpoena for an interview. In Mueller's report released this morning, prosecutors called Trump's answers inadequate. They considered issuing a subpoena for Trump, but decided against it after weighing the likelihood of a long legal battle. Prosecutors also said they had enough information from him, from other sources rather, to draw relevant factual conclusions on intent and credibility. Mueller's team investigated contacts between Trump's campaign and Russia, whether the president obstructed justice as well. The written answers did not cover obstruction of justice. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. We're just beginning to find out what's in the Mueller report. And I'm going to read some more. I'll be reading from the Associated Press here in just a second. President Trump says he's having a good day following the release of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report. And he says that no president should ever have to go through what he did again. Special Counsel Mueller's report on the Russian investigation is two volumes, 448 pages long, including attachments. The report's first volume details Russian election interference, and the second relates to whether President Trump obstructed justice. Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report reveals how Trump repeatedly sought to seize control of the Russian probe. The 10 episodes scrutinized by Special Counsel Mueller include Trump's firing of FBI Director James Comey, the president's directive to subordinates to have Mueller fired, and efforts to encourage witnesses not to cooperate. The president's lawyers have said Trump's conduct fell within his constitutional powers, but Mueller's team deemed the episodes were deserving of scrutiny to determine whether crimes were committed. And I'm just reading a few more things of what we know so far. Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report includes President Trump's written report, responses to questions. I'm going to switch and try to go to a different news source here. The Wall Street Journal says that Robert Mueller's report details Russian attempts to influence the election and explains why he did not reach a conclusion on obstruction of justice. Just reading from other sources. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. The House Judiciary Committee chairman has called Robert Mueller to testify before the committee as soon as possible. That's new. And the Huffington Post website about that bar press conference that we just carried, the website Huffington Post calls it a bizarre press conference. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. I'm going to read some of these emails that have come in. David writes this. He said, I'm tired of Trump and his professional victim status. I thought that Trump was a tough guy, but he whines all the time. Look at his recent tweets. I'm tired of it. I have found that professional victims are also usually adept con men. That's David's email. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Here's an email from Jeff in Port Richey who says, the report is irrelevant. There isn't anybody in this country that hasn't already made up their mind. If anyone still thinks President Trump did something wrong, then let's bring on the impeachment, writes Jeff in Port Richey. And you can get your comments on the air by emailing us here in the studio. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. Bill Grace is our phone producer today. And according to the Washington Post, President Trump, when told of Special Counsel's Robert Mueller's appointment, he cursed and then said, this is the end of my presidency. That's in the Mueller report today. Just looking at some more of these emails, here's an email from Anonymous in the 813 area code who says, slam dunk, no collusion, no obstruction, it's over, writes Anonymous. So, Anonymous, thank you for that. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. And the reporters in Washington, D.C. are reading the Mueller report. We're likely to get a whole lot of discussion in just a few minutes about what's in that Mueller report. 448 pages, including attachments in that Mueller report that was released just after 11 o'clock this morning, so less than an hour ago. If you want to comment about it, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And we'll see where this conversation goes. We're going to go to the phones right now and go to David in Clearwater. David, you're on WMNF. Thanks for calling in.
Holy mackerel, I'm first. Okay. This is sort of like when you write a letter that you're not sure whether you should send or not. It's always best to put it in a drawer and leave it for 2 days and then open the drawer and read it again. And then if you have to send it, send it. Getting reactions to a 400-page report that was released less than an hour ago. How do you do that? Couldn't we talk about flowers or something else?
Well, if you want to, David, if you want to talk about flowers, that's fine. You can talk about it. I know a lot of people are reading the report right now.
Exactly. They're reading it and sending out the Associated Press and everybody else reading it, sending out conclusions. And we're all going to...
Well, you don't have to go to conclusions. You could go to questions. You know, you may still have questions about, you know, what do you want to find out as you learn more about the Mueller report? You don't have to jump to conclusions at all. Because obviously nobody's read it in its entirety.
Exactly. Shouldn't everybody read it in its entirety? Because the conclusions that the Attorney General came to are not necessarily the conclusions that somebody else will come to about the same facts.
Absolutely. I think that's true.
You've got to get the facts in order to draw a conclusion.
Absolutely. I agree. But it could be that we discuss questions. What's still, based on what we've heard over the past hour or what we've heard over the past few weeks, so what questions do you still have?
As soon as I read the report, I'll give you a call and we'll talk about what questions I have.
All right. Well, great.
It'll be on the Justice website.
All right.
That's what the Attorney General said.
But yeah, it is. It's on several websites out there. And
we're charging in and saying, well, they didn't answer this. Well, that may be on page 386.
All right. David, thanks a lot. It's a good point. I'm just going to read some more, and this time from the Associated Press reporting on the Mueller report. And this is the latest from the Associated Press. The Mueller report appears to be most heavily redacted in its first section, which covers Russia's meddling in the 2016 election and examines contacts between Russian representatives and the Trump campaign. The report concludes that there was no criminal culpability by Trump aides. Several pages in that first section are almost entirely blacked out. The report's second section examines possible obstruction by President Trump. It appears to be more lightly redacted. The Justice Department's careful excisions began as early as the fourth page of the report. And again, reading from the Associated Press, the Attorney General Barr said he was withholding grand jury and classified information, as well as portions related to ongoing investigation and the privacy or reputation of uncharged peripheral people. In referencing an oligarch who headed up a team of Russian tech experts who used U.S. social media to exploit American political controversies, justice officials blacked out details about the man's ties to Russian President Vladimir Putin. And the special counsel Robert Mueller found that contacts between Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak and Trump campaign officials began in April 2016. So that's a part of what we know so far. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And Amin writes this, blah, blah, writes Amin, ain't a thing going to happen, just another play from our circus. When was the last time you saw a president go to jail? Whether it's 400 pages or 4 million pages, nothing matters, writes Amin. The theater continues, writes Amin. So that's Amin's take out there. We're going to have to wrap this up and go to the NPR News. If you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And we'll play those comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks for listening. Coming up next on the main channel here, we'll hear the Midpoint program with the Surly Feminists. I think they're due in today. And then over on our HD3 channel, the Tom Hartman Show, will be doing 3 hours of coverage on the Mueller report. So you've got a lot of good choices by staying right here on 88.5 FM, WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg.